Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 102. Srila Prabhupada adds, this instruction by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his father and mother, who are eternally connected with him, is especially intended for persons eager to return home back to Godhead. One should never think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as an ordinary human being, as non-devotees do. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally appeared and left his instructions for the benefit of all humanity, or all human society. But fools and rascals unfortunately think of him as an ordinary human being, and twist the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita for the satisfaction of the senses. Practically everyone commenting on Bhagavad Gita interprets it for sense gratification. It has become especially fashionable for modern scholars and politicians to interpret Bhagavad Gita as if it were something fictitious, and by their wrong interpretations they're spoiling their own careers and the careers of others. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, is fighting against this principle of regarding Krishna as a fictitious person, and of accepting that there was no battle of Kurukshetra, and that everything is symbolic, and that nothing in Bhagavad Gita is true. In any case, if one truly wants to be successful, one can do so by reading the text of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially stressed the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. Jare Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhulita 7.1.28. For one wants to achieve the highest success in life, one must accept Bhagavad Gita as spoken by the Supreme Lord. By accepting Bhagavad Gita in this way, all of human society can become perfect and happy. Right? So what Krishna is saying in Gita is actually for everyone. If you practice it, you apply it in your life, then you can be successful. But if you come out with these modern kind of things, oh no, but it doesn't apply like this, doesn't apply like that, or, you know, these kind of things, trying to make it into allegories or other aspects, it's not actually going to be beneficial for anyone. As it says, it ruins their career, ruins everybody else's. Right? Because what's the purpose of a career? To be engaged in the Lord's service. So if we don't do that, we don't engage in the Lord's service, then, you know, what benefit we'll actually get. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense? Mm-hmm. So the point is that's why it's as it is. The Acharyas use this term, as it is. It's a Vedic term. So, you know, it's not just Prabhupada made it up, but its point is as it is given in the parampara, that's how you have to accept it. That's as it is. So, as it is means you have the proper attitude. So that's where Prabhupada starts off in the introduction to Gita about talking about the attitude you have in approaching Gita. If the attitude's wrong, everything else will be wrong. Right? But if the attitude's correct, then you can actually appreciate and understand Gita. Otherwise, one can't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this movement then is for the purpose of people learning to accept Bhagavad Gita as it is. You know, we don't have to ourselves then make up our own interpretation, because ours will never be as good as any of these other nonsenses anyway. Because that's all they ever thought about their whole life. They grew up with Gita, so then, you know, they're good. You know, so we don't need to do the same thing. It is to be noted that because Vasudeva and Devaki would be separated from Krishna when he was carried to Gokula, the residence of Nanda Maharaj, the Lord personally instructed them that they should always think of him as their son and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That would keep them in touch with him. After 11 years, the Lord would return to Mathura to be their son. And therefore, there was no question of separation. Right? So, if they're always absorbed in the Lord as their son and as the personality of Godhead, right? Because they're Dwarkavasis. So they see both. So if they maintain that, then that will work nicely for them. They'll always be absorbed in Krishna and this way not separated. And he'll be back after 11 years. Right? And then he'll be there for the pastimes. Because basically after that, then he just stays in the Dwarka scene. Sukadeva Goswami said, after thus instructing his father and mother, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, remained silent. In their presence, by his internal energy, he then transformed himself into a small human child. In other words, he transformed himself into his original form, Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. Right, so he took the Vishnu form, which is actually his expansion, and then went back into his original form. But because his thought goes the other way. Srila Prabhupada comments. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.6, Sambhavam Yatma Mayaya, whatever is done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is done by his spiritual energy. Nothing is forced upon him by the material energy. This is the difference between the Lord and an ordinary living being. It is natural for the Lord to be untinged by material qualities. And because everything is perfectly present in his spiritual energy, as soon as he desires something, it is immediately done. The Lord is not a Prakrita Shishu, a child of this world, but by his personal energy he appeared like one. Ordinary people may have difficulty accepting the Supreme Controller, God, as a human being, because they forget that he can do everything by his spiritual energy, Atma Mayaya. They say, well, if he's in this, then how can he do this and that? No, he is who he is, so he can do whatever he likes. It's just this is his original form in which he does everything he likes. But, you know, if we're putting it into the aspect of majesty, then you have that point of being God, then is more attractive. Therefore, then he takes on the forearm form and all the majesty in that. But in his natural interaction, since it's based on just the fine little human dealings for a relationship, for rasa, you get the widest range, right? Does that make sense? Like we were discussing before, is if you want to interact with someone, then the finer the culture is, the more aspects there are to interact with somebody, right? Does that make sense? You know, if you're just coming by, you know, in the lunch line, and the lunch lady just puts a scoop of something on your plate, and you keep moving, how much interaction is there? Not much. And actually, you're happy, right? But the point is the Vedic system is so that there's more cause for interaction. So the finer these things are. So how do you get things finer? As we said, Shanta Rasa, then one's happy just knowing the Supreme Lord, knowing the position, knowing the relationship. And there's no need of anything. One is fully satisfied there, right? It's the platform of Atmarama, right? But it is the positive Atmarama. It's not just the soul, which is a temporary. This is a permanent Atmarama state, right? You can always be in this state. Well, if you're on this state without knowledge of the Lord, you know, then you will come back down to the material world because there has to be that appreciation of the personal. So here, they're appreciating all these fine points that are there that others are doing, but their point, their service is just appreciating. So now to take part in that, there must be that sense of possession. When there's a sense of possession, then the service comes up. Right? Does that make sense? That's how it works. And so the possession gets deeper than the friendship, deeper with parental, deepest with conjugal. Does that make sense? So it makes the finer and finer points. Right? And so then this gives rise to all the fine aspects of interaction. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can you say that people and devotees sometimes go from there unable to or not ready to accept the culture in at large because they're afraid of interaction?
That may be a reason. Because the point is they're worried they may be lost or whatever is the particular technical point that Freud points out on why they're crazy. Right? In other words, everybody's crazy, It's just that if you can work on pranamoy, then you're not labeled as crazy. You're not clinical. If you can only function on anamoy, then you're labeled, then you're classified as clinical. But if you're crazy, but you can work with others in their craziness, it's not called crazy. Does that make sense? I mean, that's I'm not saying that as a I'm saying it in a jestful way, but I'm actually talking fact. Yeah, we're not. Does that make sense? Yeah. So whatever is the particular reason, that may be there, because the point is you can say they're worried about the relationship, but what's the ultimate relationship? Who gave those rules? Okay, I have to interact with this person. But did that person give the rules? No. Who gave the rules? Krishna. So that means actually it's about interacting with Krishna. So I'm afraid of that, because if I interact with Krishna, that means he's the controller and enjoyer. I am not. You understand? That's where fear comes from. Right? Because you're afraid I'll lose. If I surrender to someone else, then I may lose something. So my independence, my ideas, my independence will give me the maximum enjoyment. Right? Because you control something, you can enjoy it. You can't control it, how do you enjoy it? Right? Does that make sense? So the Vedic system is how everybody can feel, has that sense of surrender, but at the same time is in control. Like that. You don't have that in any other system. Does that make sense? You know, I'm saying the moderns either male chauvinistic or female chauvinistic. It's there's no balance. The Vedic is formally the men are in control, but in actuality the women are in control. So that way both have that sense of control, so therefore they both have that sense of enjoyment. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but in that means then there's that aspect of surrender. That's why following the Vedic system is considered more pious. Because then that has those good qualities that you have to use. It is a step closer to devotional service. In other words, it's the form that devotional service uses, but it may not be devotional. So as a devotee, then we're trying to use it for to please Krishna, so that has that devotional element. But at the same time, it may be mixed with still the concept that I can enjoy this. But it doesn't mean that the form isn't good. Right? So that's the whole point. Prabhupada uses the example of the Bengali saying, Morahati Laktaka. That dead or alive, the elephant is worth a lakh of rupees. Right? Now it's probably a bit more than a lakh, but whatever. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that it means if it's alive, it can do so much. If it's dead, the bones are ivory. So it's still worth the same amount of money. Does that make sense? So elephants are always a good investment. So then the whole point is even you're following it from the material point of view, it still has the benefit, and that it's the better position from which to take up devotional service. But being conditioned by goodness, you may not, because you don't see the need, while if you're not following, then you get into a distressful condition, therefore you see the need. Right? So for starting it, then it's good. But once you start it, then you should be practicing the Vedic culture. The difficulty, those who've never practiced it find it a disturbance, because every step of it is showing you that you're not the controller and enjoyer, which is not something that those from the non-Vedic cultures appreciate. For those from the Vedic culture, even they follow it, they know that this is the only way to get control and enjoy. So they're more intelligent. So then they may maintain the mode of goodness and go on and think everything's going nicely. But in reality, then, it may be a stumbling block for their devotional service. Does that make sense? But it's a recommendation. That's what we use. Okay? So we don't use something. These other things are not as efficient. That's why it's preferred. Right? You know, if we take from the modern scientific practical point of view, you would want to use the most scientific and most practical social system, you know, in Krishna consciousness to get anything done, family life, anything, management. So the Vedic system is that. And so if we don't understand it, okay, that's there. It's not like the instructions on the inside of the, you know, the inside, the box cover for the game. You know, you get these kids' games in a box, and on the inside of the lid it tells the rules, right? You know, which mostly people don't read anyway. You know, it's just that, you know, and the Vedic system, you know, to run that system, you have Bhagavad Gita. You know, so you have 1,000 pages of, you know, instruction manual. And then for finer understandings, you have Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are the instruction manuals. You know, so we just want to be able to, you know, wing it. You know, just whatever we feel like, we just do and play it by ear. And, you know, and how's that working out for everybody? Right? Do you understand? Yeah. So, whatever is the anarta that makes it so that they can't be involved, but as long as one continues chanting and associating with devotees, however one can, one gets purified, and that brings you closer and closer to being, you know, to realizing Krishna. Because once you come to the state of pure devotion, then all these problems are gone. Yes, you don't have to worry about that.
Sometimes the devotees want to skip this part of seeing Krishna in this world, and they just want to come.
Means if they can do it, then great.
Yes,
if they can do it, great. But if you haven't already done it, probably you need to follow the process.
Yes.
Because the process to just be absorbed in Krishna only takes a moment, as shown by those who've done it. So if it doesn't happen in a moment, means then the next is sadhana bhakti. Right? That's the next option. So then, yeah. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami, oh no, we said that. No, he didn't say that. Did we say that? Oh yes, he did. Huh? Are we on as stated in Bhagavad Gita? Oh, down here. Oh, okay. Srila Jiva Goswami says that unless we accept the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as inconceivable, beyond the conception of our words and mind, we cannot understand the Supreme Lord. Right? So that also answers that question this morning. So we were trying to understand all these different subtle things, is that unless we understand it's inconceivable, only when we understand it's inconceivable, then we can understand it. When we accept it as inconceivable, and we're comfortable with that, then we can understand it. But if you don't, you think, no, it's conceivable, then it'll remain inconceivable. Because it's Krishna. He reveals. He is the intelligence. Those who doubt that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can come as a human being and turn himself into a human child are fools who think that Krishna's body is material, that he is born, and that he therefore also dies. Right? So they're just thinking in this way of the material, because they can't see beyond the modes, so they can't see beyond goodness. That's the good. That's the more elevated ones, the Vedic scholars. They're situated in goodness. When you take the non-Vedic, then you'll be passion and ignorance. Right. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 4th chapter, verses 28 and 29, there is a description of Krishna's leaving his body. Maharaj Parikit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, when all the members of the Yadav dynasty met their end, Krishna also put an end to himself, and the only member of the family who remained alive was Uddhava. How was this possible? Sukadeva Goswami answered that Krishna, by his own energy, destroyed the entire family and then thought of making his own body disappear. In this connection, Sukadeva Goswami described how the Lord gave up his body. But this was not the destruction of Krishna's body. Rather, it was the disappearance of the Supreme Lord by his personal energy. So just he becomes not manifest. Actually, the Lord does not give up his body, which is eternal, but as he can change his body from the form of Vishnu to that of an ordinary human child, he can change his body to any form he likes. This does not mean that he gives up his body. So therefore, he just was there. The body that was there was just the universal form. So that's also one of his forms. That's the material form. So that he left. So he just disappeared. And he just left the universal form there for the, how you say, the non-devotees and the scholars to keep them busy. By spiritual energy, the Lord can appear in a body made of wood or stone. He can change his body into anything because everything is his energy. Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shriyate Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 1365 Purport. So that's the point, is that Krishna can make anything work because it's all him, so he can appear in anything. Right? So it's not a problem for him. And then how he'll appear. So, in other words, his appearance and disappearance, he's already everything anyway. It's just a matter of us appreciating him as Bhagavan. Right? Or as Paramatma, or Brahman. But the point is he is everything anyway. So it's not a problem that he appears, because it's already him. As clearly said in Bhagavad Gita 7.4, Bina Prakritir Astara. The material elements are separated energies of the Supreme Lord. He transforms himself into the Archamurti, the worshipable deity, which we see as stone or wood. He is still Krishna. Therefore, the Shastra warns, Archye Vishnau Shiladhir Gurushu Nara Matihi. One who thinks that the worshipable deity in the temple is made of wood or stone, one who sees a Vaishnava Guru as an ordinary human being, or one who materially conceives of a Vaishnava as belonging to a particular caste, is Naraki, a resident of hell. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear before us in many forms, in many forms as he likes. But we must know the true facts. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veritatvataha. Bhagavad Gita 4.9. By following the instructions of Sadhu, Guru, and Shastra, the saintly persons, the spiritual master, and the authoritative scriptures, one can understand Krishna, and then one makes his life successful by returning home back to Godhead. And so, through the scripture, through the authorities of the Vaishnavas, that's how we can understand. Otherwise, we can't understand. Right? Because Krishna only reveals himself to someone who has taken shelter as a devotee. Who serves Krishna? The devotees. You want to serve Krishna, you take shelter of those who are serving Krishna. That's the system.
When we speak about Archamurti, it means always in stone deity.
Means he's there in a, means his form, he's non-different from his form, so he's always there. But the installed deity means that formally he's going to always be there.
Yes.
You know, means, how you say, whether you're interacting or not, he's manifesting a full potency. Means he's there in his form, but he's there in everything. But so when we appreciate, then he'll reciprocate. When we're not, then he's not. You understand? So when you have an installation, that means then he interacts all the time. So that's why you have to go and make the offering and do these things, because he's there.
Yes.
You understand? Well, on the other, if you think about, then he'll interact, and when you don't, he won't. So there's a difference. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, but he can do that in any form. Therefore, as a picture, he can do that. So it's not that he has to be an archa to do that. If we just remember him, that happens. Right? So that's why then you have installed and temporarily installed. There's no such thing as uninstalled. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That doesn't exist. Devotees made that one up. There's temporarily installed and permanently installed. Because if everyone remembers that when Prabhupada was present, there were no uninstalled deities. All the temple deities were all installed. People didn't have deities that were uninstalled. That was something devotees created. You understand? So you'd have deities that were occasionally taken out from sleeping, and then for a festival or something like that, and then they went back to sleep. So when they came out, they got the full worship appropriate for their position by second initiated devotees. Then they went back to sleep, and then they slept until the next whenever it was. Yeah. So you didn't have this uninstalled. It'd be just like, let's say, can you have an uninstalled girlfriend? You know, so because they're uninstalled, you don't actually have to follow any rules or that. No, when you're with the girl, you follow the rules. You know, whether you're married or not married, the rules are the same. The difference is girlfriend means when you're not with her, you don't really have to worry about it much. But when you are, then you do. But if it's a wife, then you always have to worry. So this idea of uninstalled, that's just convenience. It's not actually anything to do with Pancharatra. It's just our own convenience. So we come up with these ideas because it works for us. Whether it works for Krishna, that's another thing, but you know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is we have to be very careful about that concept. So it's temporarily. You interact, he deals. You don't interact, he's not. Permanently means it's there. So since you're not interacting, you're not going to interact, then why have the deities out? You have the deities out for what you're going to do. What is your level of worship? That will be done. Does that make sense? So that's the...
In connection with the previous discussion about the different modes, if we remember Krishna and we interact with him in a proper mood, then he will reveal himself, or he will interact back with us in that mood. Mm-hmm. But if, because we follow usually mixed devotional service, so our interactions, they may vary. In what way Krishna will interact back with us?
The aspect that means when we say mixed, that means it's not just material.
It's devotional and...
Yeah, so the devotional part, he'll respond in that way. And the material part, he'll respond according to that. He'll do both at once. Is that anything? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued, "Thereafter, exactly when Vasudeva, being inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to take the newborn child from the delivery room, Yogamaya, the Lord's spiritual energy, took birth as the daughter of the wife of Maharaj Nanda." Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. Vasudeva was instructed by the Lord, "If you are afraid, then take me to a Gokula and bring the child of Jashoda, my Maya, back here." After being instructed, Vasudeva saw that his chains automatically were loosened. When he developed the desire to depart for Gokula, Maya took her birth through Jashoda. In the Harivamsa, it says that in the eighth month of incomplete pregnancy of Devaki, and Jashoda gave birth at the same time to their children. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam is stated that Jashoda gave birth after Devaki. How to correlate the two contradictory statements? Exactly when Devaki gave birth to Krishna, Jashoda also gave birth to Krishna. After that, as described in this verse, Jashoda gave birth to Yogamaya. Jashoda gave birth to two children at different times. This is confirmed in text 10.4.9. For when Yogamaya falls from the hands of Kamsa, she is called the younger sister of Krishna. But when Krishna was born to Jashoda, it is not stated that he had four hands. It is understood that he was born from Jashoda with two hands. Yes. Okay. Srila Prabhupada adds, "As the son of Devaki, he first appeared as Vishnu, and because Vasudeva was not in the position of pure affection for Krishna, Vasudeva worshipped his son as Lord Vishnu. Jashoda, however, pleased her son Krishna without understanding his godhood. This is the difference between Krishna as the son of Jashoda and the son of Devaki." Right, so son of Devaki means they know he's God and then worship him in that way. But as the son of Jashoda, she only sees him as her son. She doesn't see him as God. So then that affection will be always there. Right, with Vasudeva and Devaki, some of the times it has that particular affection, and then other times then they see him as the Supreme Lord. But with Mother Yashoda, it's always just that affection. Does that make sense? So that's why then it has its own uniqueness. Sukadeva Goswami continued, by the influence of Yoga Maya, all the doorkeepers fell fast asleep, their senses unable to work, and the other inhabitants of the house also fell deeply asleep. Right, because Krishna is the power of the senses. So if he removes that power, then they can't do anything. Right? So then they all just fell into deep sleep, because in deep sleep, then you're not even in contact with the senses. But when you're in dreaming state, there may be a little bit of contact. But in deep sleep, then there's nothing. When the sun rises, the darkness automatically disappears. Simu and Vasudeva appeared, the closed doors, which are strongly pinned with iron and locked with iron chains, opened automatically. Since the clouds in the sky were mildly thundering and showering, Ananta Nag, an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, followed Vasudeva, beginning from the door, with hoods expanded to protect Vasudeva and the transcendental child. Right? Because when the Lord appears, one of the symptoms is that there's, you know, the thundering, that there's rain, like that. You know, just, so it's one of the symptoms of the Lord's appearance. So we see this here. So then Anantadev came to cover and protect them from that pleasant rain. Because of constant rain sent by the demigod Indra, the river Jamuna was filled with deep water, foaming about with fiercely whirling waves. Just as the great Indian Ocean had formerly given away to Lord Ramachandra by allowing him to construct a bridge, the river Jamuna gave way to Vasudeva and allowed him to cross. When Vasudeva reached the house of Nanda Maharaj, he saw that all the cowherd men were fast asleep. Thus he placed his own son on the bed of Yashoda, picked up her daughter, an expansion of Yoga Maya, and then returned to his residence, the prison house of Kamsa. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, taking Yashoda's daughter, Vasudeva returned to the prison. From the ordinary point of view, it appears unjustified that Vasudeva, who was supposed to be following the highest principles, accepted the murder of Yashoda's daughter to save the life of his son. But his normal sense of discrimination was covered by the paternal prema for the Lord who had appeared as his son. Right? Because by taking her back, then he might, Kamsa might, by seeing as a girl, then not do anything, or he might kill her. But the point is, because of the attachment to his son, that prema, he wasn't seeing him this way, by the Lord's arranging. Because the point is he can't kill Durga anyway. Like that. Because we see later on, then Krishna's sister is there, right? Subhadra is there. So it's not that there's any problem, it's just that. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Vasudeva placed the female child on the bed of Devaki, bound his legs with the iron shackles, and thus remained there as before. Exhausted by the labor of childbirth, Yashoda was overwhelmed with sleep and unable to understand what kind of child had been born to her. Srila Prabhupada comments, Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva were intimate friends, and so were their wives, Yashoda and Devaki. Although their names were different, they were practically non-different personalities. The only difference is that Devaki was able to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had been born to her and had now changed into Krishna, whereas Yashoda was not able to understand what kind of child had been born to her. Yashoda was such an advanced devotee that she never regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply loved him as her own child. Devaki, however, knew from the very beginning that although Krishna was her son, he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vrindavan, no one regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When something very wonderful happened because of Krishna's activities, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the cowherd men, the cowherd boys, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, and the others were surprised, but they never considered their son Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes they suggested that some great demigod had appeared there as Krishna. In such an exalted status of devotional service, a devotee forgets the position of Krishna and intensely loves the Supreme Personality of Godhead without understanding his position. This is called Kevala Bhakti and is distinguished from the stages of Jnana and Jnanamayi Bhakti. Is Jnana and Jnanamayi were explained in here before?
Yes.
So jnana will mean that we're the position of appreciating the shanta aspect, as we said before. Appreciating position of the Lord, but only being on the level of shanta ras. Then jnana mayi will be the vaikunta rasa, where you see the Lord in majesty. Right? So in dwarka, then it's half majesty and half man. Then kevala means it's only seeing the Lord as the particular relationship you have with Him. You don't see Him as the Lord at all. So the resonance of Braja, they're in Kevala Bhakti. Right? And then in Vaikuntha, then that's these Jnana and Jnana Mayi Bhakti. Mm-hmm. So, yes?
And Devaki Rupe? Still Kevala? Devaki?
No, it has this Jnana Mayi aspect.
Mix?
Yes. But the point is it's still counted as Vaikuntha. That's why you see it, there's Gokul and Goloka. So Goloka means the Vaikuntha aspect. Does that make sense? And Gokul means Braj. So sometimes you hear him talking about lower Goloka. That's when you divide it like that, between sweetness and majesty. So majesty is the lower area, and sweetness is the higher. Right? So you have, you know, more sweetness, less majesty, then half-half, and then moving on to Vaikuntha, that's all, you know, basically more majesty, less sweetness. You know, so. Conclusion, Pratigya. If we want to get the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become one of us in this material world, this requires great penance. But if we want to go back to Godhead, back to Krishna, we only need to understand Him and love Him. Hetu, this is because the Lord does not agree easily to descend to earth. Udaharana. Vasudeva and Devaki had to endure rain, wind, strong sun, scorching heat, and severe cold, suffering all kinds of inconvenience according to different seasons, practicing pranayama to control the air within the body, through yoga and eating only air and dry leaves, fallen from the trees for 12,000 celestial years. Upanaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described as Mahabharanya, the most munificent of charitable persons, because he gives Krishna so easily that one can attain Krishna simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. We should therefore take advantage of the benediction given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and when by chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra we are cleansed of all dirty things, we shall be able to understand very easily that Krishna is the only object of love. Nigamana. Therefore, one need not undergo severe penances for many thousands of years. One need only learn how to love Krishna and always be engaged in His service. Then one can very easily go back to Godhead. So in other words, through all these difficulties, through the various austerities and all that, then in a very, very slow way, you can make progress. But simply by being absorbed in Krishna, by hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna, as given by Lord Chaitanya, they very easily one can go back to Godhead. That's the...
Mm-hmm. But being chanting is a nice penance.
Chanting is a penance. Depends how you look at it. You find it a penance, but the point is then you keep doing it, then it becomes better. But if you don't keep doing it, it doesn't get better. Mm-hmm. So, anything's like that. Right? First, learning to ride a bicycle is a bit of a penance. Especially when you bump into the trees and, you know, the wheel goes into the grid in the drain and you go flying off and all these kinds of things. But once you continue, then it goes nicely. Mm-hmm. But the point is that severe penances, so it's not a severe penance. Right? You can't compare chanting japa with, you know, sitting out in the scorching heat, the rain, the wind. That doesn't mean that they're sitting inside and looking out the window at the rain and wind. It means they're out there sitting in it. Right? So therefore chanting japa is a little easier. Right? So the austerity is the mind. It means technically there's no penance, because there's no physical disturbance. There's only the mind. There's austerity, because the mind may not want to do it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
this chapter basically.
A little louder.
And that in this context, that this chapter basically establishes this fact that for us, like our process is chanting and then going to Kevala Bhakti. And rather than sometimes devotees, they really emphasize that you should go through Yanamayi, Shakti and everything.
No, you don't have to.
Then you can't really attain Kevala Bhakti because like this is.
So, but why do that? Then they're trying to make it that the going back to Godhead depends upon us rather than on Krishna and Bhakti. So in other words, when Krishna reveals himself, that's how you know. But he does that when you apply yourself, when you're sincere. So if you're sincere, then the process works. But if you think it's no, because I am here, I am chanting, I am doing these things, that's why it's working, then you could come up with these concepts. So in other words, when you give up the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer, then you can appreciate how Kevala Bhakti is available by the simple process Lord Chaitanya gave. But if you want to try to make everything, you know, terrible and difficult and all that, because, you know, somewhere going back, you know, 400 or 500 years and Ivan the Terrible was somehow or another your patriarch, then, yeah, you have a problem. You understand? So this whole thing of trying to make everything so terrible and tough and this and that's what makes it so important, that's not actually, that by one's modes of natures that may be attractive, but in actuality it's not important. You know, it's like eating food that tastes terrible and you think it's terrible, but because it's healthy, therefore you do it, you think it must be more healthy because it tastes bad. While someone else is eating something nice that's healthy, and you'll say, well, it can't be good because it tastes good.
This is the reality today.
Yeah. It is. But it's all, that reality has always been there. It's just a matter of where we see it. Okay, chapter 4. The atrocities of King Kamsa. Pratigya. When a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. Because of offense at the lotus feet of the devotees and brahmanas is a greater offense than that committed at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, cows are being killed all over the world. And as soon as there is a movement to establish Brahminical civilization, people in general rebel. Thus they regard the Krishna conscious movement as a form of brainwashing. When Krishna comes to establish real perfection in the social order, he personally gives protection to the cows and brahmanas. This is his first interest, because without protection of the brahmanas and the cows, there can be no human civilization, and no question of happy, peaceful life. The result of persecuting saintly persons is not only untimely death. The act is so offensive that the perpetrators also gradually lose their beauty, fame, and religious principles. The Supreme Personality of Godhead punishes them by keeping them in darkness, birth after birth, pushing them lower and lower into wretched conditions of hellish life. Right? So this is the, how you say? Because the culture starts from here, from Brahmins, from the cows, like that. Then everything else will come. Right? Because if you have the Brahminical culture, then there'll be children, there'll be women, there'll be women, then there'll be children. and then there'll be old people, right? You know, so it all happens. But you have to start with this, the Brahminical culture is there, right? Because in that, then that that needs, then cows, because dairy products are used in the Brahminical culture. That's one of the things of it, with everything in Brahminical culture, it's all uses like that. Offerings, whether you're cooking, it's always dairy products. If you're doing yajna, it's dairy products, right? These aspects are always there. So how do you perform these things without, right? Chapter 4 summarizes questions and answers. The rhetorical questions uttered by Durga Devi to Kamsa in verse 12 and by Kamsa's ministers in verse 32 do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Kamsa, following the advice of his demoniac friends, considered the persecution of small children to be very diplomatic. After Vasudev bound himself with iron shackles as before, all the doors of the prison house closed by the influence of Yogamaya, who then began crying as a newborn child. This crying awakened the doorkeepers, who immediately informed Kamsa that a child had been born to Devaki. Upon hearing this news, Kamsa appeared with great force in the maternity room, and in spite of Devaki's plea that the child be saved, the demon forcibly snatched the child from Devaki's hands and dashed the child against a rock. Unfortunately for Kamsa, however, the newborn child slipped away from his hands, rose above his head, and appeared as the eight-armed form of Durga. Durga then told Kamsa, right? So he went to dash her against the rock, but she slipped out of his hand because she's Durga. The enemy you contemplate has taken birth somewhere else. Therefore, your plan to persecute all the children will prove futile. According to the prophecy, the eighth child of Devaki would kill Kamsa. And therefore, when Kamsa saw that the eighth child was a female and heard that his so-called enemy had taken birth elsewhere, he was struck with wonder. He decided to release Devaki and Vasudev, and he admitted before them the wrongness of his atrocities. Falling at the feet of Devaki and Vasudev, he begged their pardon and tried to convince them that because the events that had taken place were destined to happen, they should not be unhappy for his having killed so many of their children. Devaki and Vasudev, being naturally very pious, immediately excused Kamsa for his atrocities, and Kamsa, after seeing that his sister and brother-in-law were happy, returned to his home. Right? So they're seeing it in this way. So in other words, Kamsa, it's not actually his business to see it in that way. Right? So but it is but Devaki and Vasudev, they would see it this way. Right? Does that make sense? So we see in the Vedic system it's this way. Well, in the modern, then, Vasudev and Devaki would take the role of a victim, and then, you know, Haisei and Kamsa, then he would just be trying to administratively try to get, you know, Haisei, just make smooth things over. You understand? So the whole point is it's actually the other way around. Is that the philosophy is there, they take that philosophy. Right? Like even you see Hiranyakashipu, he's telling the philosophy to his family members so that they can get over the grief thereof, the death of his brother. So that's how it works, is you do see it philosophically. Otherwise, what's the point? If you just go on emotionally, then it just goes on. Because the point is the emotions only have a value in connection with Krishna consciousness. Right? The emotions on their own, devoid of Krishna consciousness, they'll only give trouble. But seen in connection with Krishna, then they won't give trouble. Right? They take place in the forms that are naturally there in relationships. But the point is if those all those forms aren't connected to Krishna, then what's the point of it? Right? One may be overwhelmed with so many things, but the only thing that you'll gain from it is the trouble of the anxiety you had while you were overwhelmed. Once it goes away, what benefit is there? You know what I'm saying? What have you left with? What is gained? You know what I'm saying? So that's why then they're taking it in that mood. Not that they don't feel sorry or this and that, but the point is they do take that philosophical thing as the prominent, and then these other as just underlying. But if we reverse it in the modern and try to make it that everybody has the right to be totally emotional and throw that in everybody else's face, then where's this pranamoy where we're all cooperating? So then actually it's just a very funny anamoy which doesn't even have a really good covering to make it look like it's for everybody's benefit, because it's only benefiting certain individuals. Well, the Vedic is about benefiting everybody. You know what I'm saying? But everybody has to know how they're benefiting. Does that make sense? So that's a slight difference we'll see here. So they're setting a proper example here. And you see is that he's also then following the etiquette and everything. Because before the etiquette wasn't to his advantage, so he didn't. Now he can see is that he was wrong, so therefore following the etiquette is to his advantage. So now he is properly practicing it. But in any case, even if it does have an artificial element to it, you know, on the underlying basis, still the etiquette is of value. because it's the proper way to deal. Because he does feel this way, but only because now he's wrong. You know, does that make sense?
He's intelligent.
Yes, he's intelligent. That's why he's a big demon. If he wasn't intelligent, he's a small demon. So that's why the modern demons can't be that much of a demon, because they're so unintelligent. They don't understand the culture. You know, a formidable enemy is one who's intelligent and knows how to follow, the rules and regulations. That's a formidable enemy. One who, whatever anyone says, that guy's useless and that, and can't follow anything, they're not very formidable. They may be a lot of trouble, but they're not actually a very formidable enemy. Is that what it says? Yeah.
A
little louder?
Yes. It seems that the basis of the Vedic culture is philosophy.
The basis is philosophy. You would say is that the it means you take it. You could say, yes, you could say is that on the fundamental thing, the philosophy will be there, and then there's the application of the philosophy, is the culture. Yes. Spiritual world, there'll be the culture is there, and then the philosophy expands from that. In other words, the rasa is the original thing, and then the tattva is there to explain it. While here, then tattva comes through first, then the rasa. But yes, you could say is the philosophy is the basis. So if you don't accept the philosophy, then how will it work? Right, so that's why then we say is that in relationships you have to have good communication, because if you have good communication, then at least the philosophical points can be discussed and you can maintain the relationship. But if you can also take to the point where then the cultural aspects can be discussed, that makes it even, you know, it gives a taste to it. That's something? Loudly. Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's the whole point, is that's what we mean, is that the material world, people do things what they see as their benefit. So if someone's pious, then they see that the rules and regulations of scriptures are to their benefit. Therefore, then they will follow those rules, but it's still for their benefit. While for the demons, then only when they see an advantage that they want from the scriptures will they follow it. And when they don't see an advantage, they won't follow it, because they're not attached to piety. They know piety has its advantages, but only when they see the advantage. And when they don't see it advantageous, then they don't follow. Right? So depending whether they're looking at long-term or short-term. You know, it's like before, Hiranyakashipu, then he did do austerities, which is a long-term vision. Right? And I think he did what? I'm not sure what, 100 years of the celestial years? Yeah, so then he did, you know, so that was, you know, yeah. So then he did that. So that's a long-term. But once he got his facility and all that, then you see everything was based on immediate. Because his goal was sense gratification. So only when they see that the long term will have an advantage for that, then they'll do it. Yes. So that's how Vasudeva also got Kamsa to agree not to kill Devaki on their wedding day. Right? And so then, because he showed him the longer term and what will happen to him, and it won't be a benefit. And he also promised that, you know, he'll bring all the children. Yes, yes. If it's only devotional, can, because you see, you're working purely on Dharma without the devotional aspect, then when Draupadi asked the court, you know, about what's the religious rule, who was lost first, myself or Yudhishthira. So therefore, what's the ruling? No one could give an answer. Only, I think it was Vikarna? Huh? Only he gave an answer. You know, which was the correct. Because he wasn't in this way bound by, he's not the senior brothers. He's not like this and that. So he has that family tie, but, you know, so he could just see it in a proper way. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that Dharma on its own can be confusing, because you have the main principles, but there's so many details, and all those details, many of the details are common amongst different principles. And so then which one to look at and this and that may be difficult. So that's why then only in devotional service and seeing it in relationship to devotional service, then there's more of an understanding. Right? Because especially how to engage it in devotional service. If you just follow Dharma because it should be followed, that's not enough. You should follow it because it'll please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And so the social system that's used is Dharma. Does that make sense? Yeah. After that night passed, however, Kamsa called for his ministers and informed them of all that had happened. The ministers, who were all demons, advised Kamsa that because his enemy had already taken birth somewhere else, all the children born within the past 10 days in the villages within Kamsa's kingdom should be killed. Although the demigods always feared Kamsa, they should not be treated leniently, since they were enemies. Right? So, because the idea is that the enemy is there, so who this enemy is, it's not the demigod made the celestial voice made the prophecy. So then, you know, it could be a demigod, could be this, that. They don't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even though the demigods do fear Kamsa and leave him alone, still they shouldn't be spared because of this. So you can see the demoniac mentality. They're functioning here just on niti, not on dharma. Because the dharma is only if you're, you know, there's a cause for a problem. So you watch, you see all those things. So you can find out who are all the kids who were born in the last 10 days. Keep an eye on those families, see how it develops. But that's not, they're just using niti, is that if you have an enemy, just get rid of your enemy, your enemy's friend, you know, your enemy's relatives, your enemy's dentist, you get rid of anybody. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's just how it works. Yeah. Kamsa should try his best to uproot their existence, because they're the problem. What they don't understand is they're also the ones that make everything work, but hey, you know. The demoniac ministers further advised Kamsa, and the demons continue their enmity towards Vishnu, because Vishnu is the original person among all the demigods, right? So the demigods are the enemies of the demons, and the demigods are coming from Vishnu, get their power from Vishnu, so in that way then Vishnu becomes their enemy also. Though he's above the demigods, they're generally not fighting with him, but still he's an enemy just because of his association with them. The brahmanas, the cows, the Vedas, austerity, truthfulness, control of the senses and mind, faithfulness and mercy are among the different parts of the body of Vishnu. He is the origin of the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, right? So they know philosophy, just how they're going to use it, that's the problem. Therefore, the ministers advised, the demigods, the saintly person, the cows, and the brahmanas should be systematically persecuted. Strongly advised in this way by his friends, the demoniac ministers, Kamsa approved of their instructions and considered it beneficial to be envious of the brahmanas. Following Kamsa's orders, therefore, the demons began committing their atrocities all over Rajabhumi. Right? So because of the demoniac nature, they take things that shouldn't be seen in that way and see it the other way, because they see the demons, the demigods, as their enemies, because they want to take over, the universe. And so therefore then the demigods get in the way of that, because they're not actually supposed to be running the universe. So that's the difficulty. So that way then they're their enemy. That's the point, is that someone does something wrong and you stop them from doing that wrong, and then they want to take revenge because you stopped them. This is the demoniac mentality. It's not a pious mentality. Point is, you're wrong, you got stopped, then okay, you were wrong. But when you do wrong, and then someone stops you, and now you want to get a revenge with them, this is just the mode of ignorance. It's just about yourself. So there is no consideration of right and wrong. It means, in other words, what's good for me is right, what's not good for me is wrong. That's the demoniac mentality. So the Shastras are trying to bring us to the Deva mentality, where you're working for others. There's that sacrifice, you know, voluntarily doing things for others' benefits so that you are uplifted. Because the ultimate point is to worship Krishna, who's the origin of the demigods. Right? So that means the demigods work for Krishna, so therefore we taking up those qualities, we work for Krishna. That's why it says the devotees have all the good qualities of the demigods. And here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav Premanandi.